أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. We seek the protection of God from Shaitan, who has been disqualified from God's kingdom of special grace and mercy because of his arrogance and his defiance. If we avoid these satanic habits of arrogance, whatever we know to be true, we submit. And if we avoid the satanic habit of defiance, whatever we know to be evil, either by our aql or by the guidance of the sharia or by the conscience, we defiantly don't commit that evil. And if we have reliance on God, definitely we shall be given the strength to be able to identify, to oppose, and to overcome Shaitan. Shaitan is a weak creature. He only wins when we are weak before him. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We humbly turn to God and ask for His special grace and guidance, because He is the absolute perfect being. Nobody can achieve any perfection and goodness until and unless Allah wills it so. And we turn to Him because He is Rahman. His mercy, His love, His grace, His attention, His care reaches out to each and everything in the universe, brings it to life, sustains it, and enables it to grow and to develop and to achieve its goal of perfection. And we turn to Him because He is Rahim. His extra love and grace and mercy, which is abundant, which is eternal, which is unimaginable, but which is extra, is exclusively reserved for those amongst us who believe in Him and who respond to His invitation and who submit to His will and who are ready to live according to His dictates and who are ready to die for it. Alhamdulillah. Wassalatu wassalam ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin. And we send our salutations and greetings on the Holy Prophet and on his holy progeny, who were the best guides for mankind till the end of time. Respected scholars, elders, brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. In our commemoration of the event of Karbala, the most important thing that we should keep in our minds is that this movement was led by a person who was the equivalent of the Quran, and therefore every saying and every phrase and every movement and all the actions, his rebellion, his protest, his uprising, they were all based on the teachings and they were the implementation and the application of the Quranic guidance. So we were discussing the wasiyah that he left behind before his departure from Medina to Mecca. The importance of wasiyah is mentioned in the Quran. In fact, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi says that من لم يحسن وصيته عند الموت كان نقصا في مروته وعقله. If a person makes a wasiyah but doesn't make a good wasiyah at the time of his death, then it is an indication of a defect and a deficiency in his maturity and in his wisdom. So the Prophet was then asked, قيل يا رسول الله كيف يوصي الميت. A person who is about to die, how would you advise, how should he make a wasiyah, a good wasiyah? So the Prophet then explains, إذا حضرته وفاته, when he's about to die, واجتمع الناس إليه, and his family and his friends come near his bedside, let him pronounce, let him say, well, this is a verbal wasiyah. But it's a verbal wasiyah which is an expression of the faith. And incidentally, what Imam Hussein alayhi salam left behind in a written format was recommended by the Holy Prophet as a verbal wasiyah. اللهم فاطر السماوات والأرض عالم الغيب والشهادة الرحمن الرحيم. Well, incidentally, this wasiyah was taught by the Prophet to Imam Ali alayhi salam. And Imam Ali alayhi salam himself says that the Prophet recommended and reminded me that I should teach this to my followers. Ta'allamha anta wa'allimha ahla baytik wa shi'atik. Learn this and teach it to your followers and teach it to your family. Because Jibreel taught me this wasiyyah. So, O Lord, you are the creator, one. And you are the knower of the hidden and the visible, two. And you are all merciful, three. Allah has many names. 1,000 names according to Josh and Kabir. 120, 130 names are mentioned in the Quran. The Quran also mentions that his names are uncountable. وَلِلَّهِ الْأَسْمَاءُ الْحُسْنَى. Any name which is perfect, which expresses the ultimate and the highest level of perfection, Allah alone can qualify to be attributed by that name. So they're uncountable in one sense. But if they can be summarized, the three most important names are the ones which I mentioned here. He's the all-powerful one, the creator of the heavens and the earth. He's the all-knowing, unlimited in his knowledge. And he's the all-loving and all-merciful, unlimited in his grace and mercy. That means the mayyit, before he enters the next realm of existence, he testifies, O Lord, I came from you and I go back to you. You're the all-powerful one. Nobody can stand up against you, one. Two, but as I come to you, you know my exact past and all my achievements and all my failures. And you know my needs and you know my shortcomings. And three, though you're powerful and therefore you can punish, but I come to you because you're a Lord of mercy and grace and compassion. So it's with a belief in the hope, and the hope in the, not only belief in the justice of God, but a hope in the generosity and the compassion and the mercy of God with which the mayyit now leaves the world. Allahumma inni a'had ilayka fi darid dunya. O Lord, I make a covenant and a promise and an oath in the dunya. Anni ashhadu an la ilaha illa ant wahdaka la sharika lak. That there is no deity and power that is worthy of worship and obedience and praise and thanks and love and hope and fear and obedience other than you. وَأَنَّ مُحَمَّدًا عَبْدُكَ وَرَسُولُكَ. And I testify that Muhammad is your servant and your messenger. وَأَنَّ الْجَنَّةَ حَقٌّ وَأَنَّ النَّارَ حَقٌّ وَأَنَّ الْبَعْثَ حَقٌّ وَالْحِسَابَ حَقٌّ وَالْقَدَرُ وَالْمِيزَانَ حَقٌّ وَأَنَّ الدِّينَ كَمَا وَصَفْتُ. These are all descriptions of the stages in Qiyamah. The ultimate destination, either heaven or hell. And before that, the resurrection from the grave and the accounting and the scale of deeds. The stages before we reach the final destination. I believe all of them are true. They are going to happen. They are unavoidable. They are inescapable. It's inevitable. If you are the true God and you are all powerful and you are all just, this end life is unavoidable. The next life is unavoidable. I testify to that. وَأَنَّ الدِّينَ كَمَا وَصَفْتَ وَأَنَّ الْإِسْلَامَ كَمَا شَرَّعْتَ وَأَنَّ الْقَوْلَ كَمَا حَدَّثْتَ وَأَنَّ الْقُرْآنَ كَمَا أَنزَلْتَ. In order for me to be able to make the right choice of the destiny, which is eternal salvation, I testify also that you have shown me the way, and that is the deen and the sharia and the way of the Prophet. وَأَنَّكَ أَنْتَ اللَّهُ الْحَقُّ الْمُبِينَ جَزَى اللَّهُ مُحَمَّدًا خَيْرَ الْجَزَاءِ وَحَيَّ مُحَمَّدًا وَآلَ مُحَمَّدٍ بِالسَّلَامِ. And this faith has been delivered to me with a lot of sacrifice. May Allah reward the greatest of the reward to the messenger who brought it to me. And may Allah greet him with the best of the salutations, the all-global comprehensive peace. And then finally, the wasiyya recommended by Jibreel to the Prophet and through the Prophet to Imam Ali and the followers is a dua. اللهم يا عدتي عند كربتي ويا صاحبي عند شدتي ويا ولي نعمتي. Incidentally, some of these same words are recited by Imam Hussein alayhi salam on his deathbed in Karbala on the day of Ashura. O Lord, in times of trouble I return to you. You are my companion in difficulties. You are the provider of all the blessings and bounties that I enjoy. Ilahi wa ilaha abai. You are my Lord and the God of my forefathers. La takilni ila nafsi tarfata aynin abada. I'm now moving from one phase of existence to another phase of existence. I'm not sure of the outcome there. But this much I ask you, that do not abandon me to myself. I can't survive on my own. فَإِنَّكَ إِن تَكِلْنِي إِلَى نَفْسِي أَقْرَبُ مِنَ الشَّرُّ وَأَبْعَدُ مِنَ الْخَيْرِ. If you leave me to myself, naturally I will gravitate towards evil and I'll move away from that which is the best for me. فَآنِسْ فِي الْقَبْرِ وَحْشَتِي وَجَعَلْ لِي عَهْدًا يَوْمَ أَلْقَاكَ مَنْشُورًا. O Lord, provide for me a company which is comfortable in the grave. In the grave, I'm all alone. It's me and my thoughts. It's me and my feelings. It's me and my past. It's me and my memories. It's me and my actions. When you go to sleep and you're all alone and it's dark in the night and there's nobody around, who is there with you? It's you and yourself. In the grave, it's me and myself. Nobody else is going to be there. If those thoughts were the thoughts that took me towards evil and I gravitated towards it and I habituated myself towards it, and I develop pleasure in the evil, this evil will now show its true color in the grave, in the next world. And it's painful. It's tormenting. It is dark. It's depressing. This evil. Because evil in itself is empty. There's no nur in there. It doesn't take me higher. It brings me lower down to the physical world, to the animal world. So, O Lord, give me company, which is comfortable. In the dunya, in the qabr, فَآنِسْ فِي الْقَبْرِ وَحْشَتِي. And, O Lord, prepare for me the covenant which I shall present before you on the day of judgment. And that is the shafa'ah which we hope from the holy ones. This last moment wasiyyah, in actual fact, is a summary of the belief that a mu'min or a Muslim should have throughout their life. But at the time of death, when you're sick or when you are about to die and there's pain and there's suffering and there's so much attention towards the body, you tend to forget a lot of things. A lot of things go out of your mind. If you're a professional, the skills that you've developed, you'll tend to forget them. In fact, you'll forget your ABCs of life. At that moment, what survives with you is what is intimately ingrained into the profundity and the depth of your soul and heart and mind. Something which is spontaneous and natural in your thinking as you go to sleep. And something which is natural and spontaneous as you wake up in the morning. And therefore the recommendation before you go to sleep, it's mustahab to make wudu and face the qibla. Be in a state of ibadah, face the qibla and recite the surahs and make some dhikr. And gradually you doze off to sleep. And then the first thing you do when you wake up, also you make the dhikr of Allah. Which means that, O Lord, had it not been for my physical body requiring rest, I would have engaged in your ibadah. And that's why you get the thawab of ibadah if you do this. But the important thing is the soul has to develop this bond with these basics of the faith. So that in the last moment, we don't forget this reality. The Quran says that, وَمَن نُعَمِّرْهُ نُنَكِّسْهُ فِي الْخَلْقِ. And when people get old, they tend to forget things. They become almost childlike. Their mental faculties, their physical abilities, they all grow deficient and they reduce. But for one group of people. In Surah Teen, Allah says, ثُمَّ رَدَدْنَاهُ أَسْفَلَ سَافِلِينَ. But not all of them. إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ. Except for those whose faiths are strong and who are regular and constant and habitual in doing عَمَلَ صَالِح. عَمَلَ صَالِح means that on every occasion, there is an action which is appropriate to that occasion. Something has to be avoided, it's haram. Something has to be done, it's wajib. Something is recommended, mustahab. For every occasion, there is a duty to be performed. That is the amal salih for that occasion. If this individual has habituated himself or herself to perform that which is the appropriate for that occasion, that's the amal salih. And that is what protects and prevents this individual from losing their faculties towards the end. So Imam alayhi salam makes the wasiyyah. In the wasiyyah, as we were discussing, he mentions the motive for his movement, and one very important statement he makes is that I don't wish to make this uprising for my personal gain. I want to gain power, or I want to get control over the public treasury, or I want to enjoy life, or I want to create disunity within the ummah. These are not my goals. إِنَّمَا خَرَجْتُ لِطَلَبِ الْإِصْلَاحِ فِي أُمَّةِ جَدِّي أُرِيدُ أَنْ آمُرَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَأَنْهَى عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. I want to establish a society of virtue. I want to establish a society where there is no vice. I want to bid and order and command that which is good and virtuous. I want to forbid and prevent and eliminate that which is evil and wicked and vice. وَأَنْ أَسِيرَ بِسِيرَةِ جَدِّي وَأَبِي Ali ibn Abi Talib. And I want to restore the seerah of my grandfather and my father. Imam alayhi salam, I will pause here to explain this particular motive, because it's the fundamental motive of this movement, which is entirely based on the Quran, incidentally. But before I do that, a quick reminder of the remaining part of the wasiyyah. He then says that our confrontation between the Bani Hashim and the Bani Umayyah, or the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam and the Bani Umayyah, is a confrontation which is ideological. It's not a family feud. فَمَنْ قَبِلَنِي بِقَبُولِ الْحَقِّ فَاللَّهُ أَوْلَى بِالْحَقِّ. I presented my story, my motive for this movement. Whosoever has understood the truth and accepts it and therefore declares his commitment to join my movement, then he shouldn't join me for my sake. He should join me because I stand up for the truth. فَمَنْ قَبِلَنِي بِقَبُولِ الْحَقِّ فَاللَّهُ أَوْلَى بِالْحَقِّ. The motive for joining Imam should be, I've recognized the truth, I've seen the truth, I like the truth, I accept the truth, I want to live by the truth, and if necessary, I want to die for the truth. That should be the motive. وَمَنْ رَدَّ عَلَيَّ هَذَا. Well, it's your choice. You don't want to accept it, that's your wish. I can't force you. But if you reject, أَصْبِرُ حَتَّى يَقْضِيَ اللَّهُ بَيْنِي وَبَيْنَ الْقَوْمِ بِالْحَقِّ وَهُوَ خَيْرُ الْحَاكِمِينَ. Then I shall patiently, with perseverance, with determination, continue on my path till Allah makes the final judgment. If you don't help me, that will not make my cause fail. Because I'm supporting the truth, and truth will finally prevail. You don't join me, you are a failure, not me, not the cause of truth. So if you reject, I'll make sabr. And finally, the concluding statement, وَهَذِهِ وَصِيَّتِي يَا أَخِي إِلَيْكَ وَمَا تَوْفِيقِ إِلَّا بِاللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ تَوَكَّلْتُ وَإِلَيْهِ أُنِيبِ. So I would like to pause here and dwell on this important requirement of أمر بالمعروف and نهي عن المنكر. Right from the beginning of history till the last prophet, and in the ummah of the last prophet, the one important duty of the elders, of the believers, of the leaders, was to ensure that once they know what is virtue, they must ensure that that virtue is enacted in the community, in public. And should there be a situation where something is known to be good and should be done, and somebody's not doing it and he's got no excuse for not doing it, he's not ignorant. If he's ignorant, educate him. He's got no excuse for not doing it. There is no danger that he may face by doing it. Then the requirement is amr bil ma'ruf. This person must be ordered, he must be commanded, he must be reminded, he must be admonished to do that good. Vice versa, if there is evil being done, if the evil is very clear, the person has no ambiguity about it, he's not ignorant, in which case he needs to be educated. Or no, he knows about it but he's forgotten, so he needs to be reminded. No, he knows it, he hasn't forgotten it, he's got no excuse for doing it, he's not overwhelmed by circumstances, and yet he's doing it. And not once, by mistake. He does a second time, a third, and repetitively and persistently he does it, then nahi anil munkar becomes wajib. If a people fail to do this amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar, the result is virtues are not being acted upon, vices are being acted upon, and they're spreading, and there's nobody to stop it. As a result, now Allah says, you people deserve to be punished. So observe in Surah Hud, chapter 11, ayah 116, Allah condemns the past community, not the Muslim community, meaning that this principle of advocating virtue, of condemning vice, is a principle which was there even in the past communities of the prophets. فَلَوْلَا كَانَ مِنَ الْقُرُونِ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ أُولُو بَقِيَّةٍ. Why is it that they were not amongst the generations who came before you, the other communities to whom other prophets went? How come these people were indifferent? How come there were no people amongst them who were wise, who were elderly, who were respected, who had authority, who had influence? So that يَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْفَسَادِ فِي الْأَرْضِ, so that they would have forbidden and prevented and opposed evil. How come they were not there? Question is being asked, meaning that Allah is condemning. They should have done it, they didn't do it. And look at the results now. You only condemn a person if that person can be held responsible for it. That means this responsibility is not only in our ummah, it was there also in the communities before us. إِلَّا قَلِيلًا, except for a small group of people who did this duty. مِمَّنْ أَنْجَيْنَا مِنْهُمْ, and these are the ones whom we delivered and whom we saved. When the punishment comes down, when evil spreads, when you start breaking a law, a health law, a dietary law, well, the poison is going to work. That particular lifestyle is going to affect the part of your body and it's going to harm it. The harm may not show itself immediately, but over time, that sickness is going to appear. That's the law of God. That's how the law of biology operates. The same thing with a community. A society is a body. A certain vice, a certain act of evil has harmful and damaging effects. If it's left unchecked, initially the effect won't show itself, but gradually there will come a time when this body will become sick, the body of the community. And with that sickness, everything else will be affected. So Allah says, how come there was nobody to stop the evil from spreading? وَاتَّبَعَ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا مَا أُتْرِفُوا فِيهِ وَكَانُوا مُجْرِمِينَ. There were three causes of their downfall. They were those who were evil, and they followed the wealth and the affluence and the prosperity that they got. It made them proud, it made them arrogant, it made them negligent of their duty. They thought they could get away with it. They thought that with their influence and their money, they could do whatever they wanted. Nobody could catch them. So they persisted in their evil, despite knowing it is evil, despite being warned it's evil, despite their aql telling them it's not right. despite their conscience biting them. But they kept on suppressing all these messages and they continued in their evil ways. Till وَكَانُوا مُجْرِمِينَ, they came to a stage in their lives where evil became a habit for them, which was then unavoidable. They reached a level of addiction. They couldn't survive if they didn't do that act of evil. Once they reached that stage of being so damaged that now they cannot be repaired, that's when the punishment then descends on them. But it all begins with the abandonment of Nahi anil Munkar, abandonment of Amr bil Ma'ruf. So the Quran is condemning past communities. Excuse me. In Surah Ma'idah, chapter 5, Allah condemns the people of the book. Specifically, there were occasions when they should have stopped the spread of evil, but they didn't. Ayah number 78 onwards. لُعِنَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا مِنْ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ عَلَى لِسَانِ دَاوُودَ وَعِيسَى بْنَ مَرْيَمَ ذَلِكَ بِمَا عَصَوْا وَكَانُوا يَعْتَدُونَ. Allah has cursed some groups of Bani Israel, those who rejected the faith. And they were cursed by their own prophets, Prophet David and Prophet Jesus, the son of Mary. They cursed them. And the reason was because they were disobedient, and the reason was because they were habitually transgressing and violating the laws which they knew to be clear evil. كانوا. What is the problem? Why is it that they were cursed? كانوا لا يتناهون عن منكر فعلوه لبئس ما كانوا يفعلون. The problem with them again was, excuse me. The problem with them was they did not prohibit, they did not forbid the clear evil which was being committed in public. They just kept silent. The riwayah says not everybody was a sinner. They were being cursed, but not everyone was a sinner. There were a few who were sinners. But then this sinner was being accepted and they were being approved by the silence, by the friendship, by the company that they enjoyed from the pious people. Nobody said anything to them. So they thought it's normal, it's acceptable, there's nothing wrong. The riwayah in the tafsir of this ayah says that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, that in Bani Israel the problem was that الرَّجُلُ يَرَى أَخَاهُ فِي الذَّنْبِ فَيَنْهَاهُ. Initially, good people did try to stop the evil people from doing their evil. فَلَا يَمْنَعُهُ ذَلِكَ مِنْ أَنْ يَكُونَ أَكِيلَهُ وَجَلِيسَهُ وَشَرِيبَهُ. But then he would still continue to give them company. He would move out with them, he would attend their assemblies, he would eat with them, he would drink with them. He would socialize with them as if there was nothing wrong. A healthy person moving around with a sick person to a point where now the sickness begins to spread. So the end result is the curse by the prophets. A second riwayah says, لَمْ يَكُونُوا يَدْخُلُونَ مَدَاخِلَهُمْ وَلَا يَجْلِسُونَ مَجَالِسَهُمْ وَلَكِنَّهُمْ كَانُوا إِذَا لَقَوْهُمْ أَنِسُ بِهِمْ. It's not that they went to the clubs and did the sins with them. It's not that they sat on the in the gatherings where alcohol, for example, was being drunk and they drank. No, they avoided those sinful gatherings. But when the sinners came out in ordinary society, they met with them and they were friendly with them and they smiled at them and they approved everything they did. No nahi anil munkar. The result was the sickness and the cancer spread, and the body of the community, the social fabric was being eaten up from within, to the point where now they deserve to receive God's wrath. لَبِئْسَ ما كانوا يفعلون. Evil is what they did. ترى كثيرا منهم يتولون الذين كفروا لبئس ما قدمت لهم أنفسهم أن سخط الله عليهم وفي العذاب هم خالدون. The end result now was, in the community of Bani Israel, the good doers, the evil doers were left to do whatever they wanted. Gradually they gravitated towards the kafir, those who did not believe in the faith of the Ahl Kitab. Once they gravitated to the mushrik and the kafir who didn't believe in the scriptures, they adopted their lifestyles. They started to fraternize with the kafir. To be friendly with the kafir is nothing wrong. But to fraternize with the kafir in such a way that you start doing evil with them and you start accepting their evil lifestyles and just to get approval from them, you want to become a member of their community and their society, and gradually their thoughts come in and their culture and their ideas and their ideology and their beliefs begin to influence, that's where the problem is. The end result was of disobedience, of approval by the good doers of this disobedience, was that now the society opened up to the influence of the kafir. The end result, Allah's displeasure on these people. This is as far as the Ahl Kitab, the Christian and the Jewish community is concerned. Allah says it was wrong for these people, some of them, the Bani Israel, for them to do this, to open themselves to the influence of the outsiders, to the influence of the pagans, and lose their own true faith. The tafsir of this, the application to our ummah, Imam alayhi salam, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, it's the fifth holy Imam, he is reported to explain this ayah in these words: يتولون الملوك الجبارين ويزينون لهم أهواءهم ليصيبوا من دنياهم. The reason they don't do nahi عن المنكر is they know, the Muslims, they know they have rulers who are evil. They have rulers who rule according to their own dictates, nothing to do with the Sharia. They go and flatter them. They go and try to please these rulers so that they get a little of the dunya that these rulers have. So nahi anil munkar is abandoned. By ordinary people, innocent people, good-hearted people, people who want to be good, who were trained in a good society, they were given the proper upbringing. But once they become mature, enter into society, for the sake of the dunya, they keep silent. Their silence becomes approval, it becomes a support. The evil system is strengthened, the evil system survives, and the cancer spreads. And this is precisely the problem which Imam Hussein alayhi salam was trying to address at that time and in all times. Take another example. This is condemnation of not doing nahi anil munkar and amr bil ma'ruf. The Holy Prophet has warned, if you fail to do this, gradually your society is going to sink to depths of depravity and evil, to a point when evil becomes normal. So the Prophet says, كَيْفَ بِكُمْ, let me tell you what's going to happen in your future. كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا لَمْ تَأْمُرُوا بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. He was sitting with the companions, he says, there will come a time when you people will fail to do أَمْرُ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. And the Sahaba said, oh, will we tolerate people not doing good? They don't come for Salah and we keep quiet? And the Prophet said, no, worse than that. كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا أَمَرْتُمْ بِالْمُنْكَرِ. Not only will you not bid and command to do good, you will start now asking people to do evil. If they don't do evil, you don't give them your company and your support and your assistance. That's the second worst stage now. And the Sahaba says, oh, we will be inviting others towards evil now. Not only will we not calling them to the masjid and to do good, but we will now be accompanying them and calling them to come to the clubs and doing some evil. The Prophet said, no, worse than that. كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا رَأَيْتُمُ الْمُنْكَرَ مَعْرُوفًا. What about the time when you will no longer see evil as evil? Evil is normal. No. Worse than that. What about the time when you will see evil as good? And vice versa, good as evil. It's a toppled world now. It's an upside down world where evil is looked at as good and good is looked at as evil. That's the worst and the lowest stage of immorality and depravity. When I do something wrong, if I feel guilty, because I know it, something is good, I didn't do it, I feel guilty. I've done something wrong, I know it's wrong, and therefore I feel guilty. But if I don't feel what I've done is wrong, no guilt. No! What I've done wrong, I'm happy about it because I think it is good. I enjoy evil. This is a society which has reached its deprivation and damnation to the lowest level now. This is what Imam Alayhi Salaam is referring to. When you become desensitized to evil. No, when you think evil is normalized. No, you begin to glamorize evil. That's when the society now needs an upheaval of the type which Imam Hussein alayhi salam was referring to. Example. I'm sorry, it may not be a good example, but nudity, the way it was introduced into the Western society, people are respectful in the West towards dressing and clothing. If there were some deviant people, we had nudist clubs, these were in a small minority. But gradually through the media, it was pushed into the mainstream, beginning in the 50s, in the United States, for example. Come the 60s, these magazines reached a circulation of almost about 6 million. Oh, 6 million buyers and customers are ready to buy such photographs, magazines. Things are becoming normal now. And then gradually, you come at a time in the 70s when it's considered to be the Bible of the young man to have such a magazine. You want to identify the person who is a successful young man of this generation, ask him if he's reading that particular magazine or not. Things have become normal gradually. People don't consider it evil or guilt. There's no sense of guilt anymore. These are old examples. I mean, examples today must be worse than this. I don't know. James Bond. James Bond was the perfect hero portrayed for a society, for a permissive society. A society which was pleasure-seeking, which was sexually active, and which considered its progress and its advancement in moving from one partner to another partner. And Bond represented that macho male. Every man wants to be a Superman, secretly. Everyone wants to, I mean, this is the image being projected, that every man wants to make love to anything that walks. And James Bond movies promoted this image. Billions of dollars earned from the viewers. 1 billion viewers when the movies are released. The swinging bachelor. That's the image being promoted. But the fact that it has such a wide audience means that things have become normal now. In contrast, in the Quran, the Muslims have been introduced as a community who are very vigilant. Muslims, you are a model for the rest of the world. But you know why? Kuntum khayra ummatin ukhrijat linnas. Ta'muruna bil ma'rufi wa tanhawna 'anil munkar wa tu'minuna billah. Because you have iman in the right God, who has sent the messengers and the last messenger and the last message. But before the faith is mentioned, the Muslims are projected as a model for the rest of mankind because of Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. Whatever they know to be virtuous by their aql or by the sharia or by the conscience, they are very careful in ensuring that they act upon it and they preach and they promote and they support. the enactment of that virtue in society, in their own family, in their own community, at a national level, at an international level, and vice versa. What they know to be evil by their aql or by their teaching of the sharia or by their conscience, they avoid it themselves. In their family, they bring up the family in such a way that they are trained to avoid that evil, and then they spread that message and prevent others from committing those evil. Otherwise, we're warned. You fail to do this, and you will be condemned to be ruled by evil. And when you are afflicted, and when you suffer, and when you are oppressed, because you allowed evil to spread, corruption to spread, morality to move away from society, you allowed it to happen. Now you're stuck, you're in problem. You come and make dua, oh Allah, amman yujibul mutarra. And Allah says, sorry. You created the circumstances which led to this end result. No, your dua will not be accepted. Tonight we commemorate the memory of a brave companion by the name of Hur. Hur, the son of Yazid al-Tamimi al-Riyahi. Hur lived in Kufa, brave soldier, but he was in the service of the evil empire, unfortunately. He was appointed as a commander of a contingent of 1,000. And he was sent by Ibn Ziyad to go and arrest. Once Ibn Ziyad learns that Imam Hussein alayhi salam has made his movement from Mecca on his way to Kufa, Hur was supposed to intercept and to stop Imam's caravan from reaching Kufa, and to arrest and to escort and to bring him by force in the presence of Ibn Ziyad so that the bay'ah could be declared. That was the task entrusted to Hur. They meet at a place known as Dhul Husum, and Imam alayhi salam sees that they have been moving from over large distance, and they are thirsty, and their horses are thirsty, and he orders them water to be supplied and provided to them. After they have rested, he asks them, yes, what have you come here for? And Hur introduces himself, I've come here to take you and escort you back to Ibn Ziyad. At that time, the time for prayer arrives, and Imam alayhi salam says, we pray first. We're going to pray. What is your plan? Are you going to join us, or are you going to pray separately? Hur says, no, we will join you in prayer. It seems that Hur, though, was in the service of the evil empire, but he knew who Imam Hussein was, and he knew Imam Hussein deserved to be the Imam, at least in prayers. So Imam instructs the Muazzin Hajjaj bin Masruq to make the Adhan and the Iqama. After the Salat al-Zuhr, Imam stands up and gives a khutbah. He is addressing now the army. Tells him, أيها الناس, إنها معذرة إلى الله. Let me explain to you why is it that I've come here. إني لم أقدم على هذا البلد حتى أتتني كتبكم. I came here towards Kufa because you sent me the letters of invitation when I was in Mecca, when you came to know about my movement away from Medina in protest against Yazid. You told me, ليس علينا إمام, we don't have a righteous leader. فلعل الله أن يجمعنا بك على الهدى. Why don't you come over and you become our righteous leader, and through you we get guidance. So I'm on my way, and I've arrived. فإن كنتم على ذلك فقد جئتكم. If you now give me assurance, دخلت معكم إلى مصركم. Then let's go back to Kufa, me as your leader and you as the citizens. وإن لم تفعلوا, but if you refuse to accept me, وكنتم كارهين لقدومي, انصرفت. Alright, good enough. So you don't want to accept me as your imam. No problem, I'm not going to impose myself upon you. Give me the freedom, let me decide where to go. But don't force me to arrest me and then take me and surrender me to Ibn Ziyad. No way. So he continues the khutbah. He says, well, you see how things have changed. إِنَّ الدُّنْيَا قَدْ تَغَيَّرَتْ وَتَنَكَّرَتْ وَأَدْبَرَ مَعْرُوفَهَا وَاسْتَمَرَّتْ جِدًّا وَلَمْ يَبْقَ مِنْهَا إِلَّا الصُّبَابَ كَالصُّبَابَةِ الْإِنَاءِ We're living in a society where Amr bil Ma'ruf, where Ma'ruf is no longer practiced. We're living in a society where Munkar is being practiced. And you see it, how the dunya has changed. Imam is explaining to them. And وَخَسِيسِ عَيْشٍ كَالْمَرْعَ الْوَبِيلِ. Look at our economic situation. أَلَا تَرَوْنَ إِلَى الْحَقِّ لَا يُعْمَلُ بِهِ. Don't you have eyes? Don't you hear? Don't you see? Don't you see in your society, haq is very clearly being violated. Isn't it very obvious? وَإِلَى الْبَاطِلِ لَا يُتَنَاهَا عَنْهُ. What is clearly known to be evil is being practiced. You see it, it's happening. لِيَرْغَبِ الْمُؤْمِنِ فِي لِقَاءِ رَبِّهِ حَقَّا. In such a situation, we should try to avoid being assimilated into the evil. We should try to stop the evil. But if nothing is possible and the evil is forcing us to become evil, then to die is better than to live. Not me as Hussein. لِيَرْغَبِ الْمُؤْمِنِ. If you are a true mu'min, you can't afford, you can't tolerate this state of affairs. إِنِّي لَا أَرَى الْمَوْتِ إِلَّا سَعَادَةً وَالْحَيَاةَ مَعَ الظَّالِمِينَ إِلَّا بَرَمَا. For me, life is indignity. It's a suffering. It's a pain if I have to submit to evil. For me, death is a source of dignity and honor, to die for the sake of truth. That is my principle. That's a statement that should wake up any sleeping conscience. Imam is clearly explaining why I cannot accept. I don't know how you people are asleep. In other words, Imam is trying to tell them. Hur says, excuse me, but I'm not the one who sent the letter to you. I never invited you. I don't know what's happening between. I don't know who has written a letter to you. I have been given an instruction. I'm supposed to stop you from where you're going. I'm supposed to escort you by force, take you to Ibn Ziyad. That's my duty. Come the time of Asr, and Imam alayhi salam leads the prayer of Asr, and then again he stands up and recites another khutbah. It seems that people were mesmerized, they were afraid of Ibn Ziyad, they were bought over by money. Imam had to wake up. Imam had to alert and get them out of that state of slumber. So a second khutbah. Ayyuhan nas, this is after Salatul Asr now. Ana ibn binti Rasulillah. Don't you know who I am? I'm the son of the daughter of the Prophet. Nahnu awla biwilayati hadhihi al-umur alaykum min ha'ula al-mudda'in. There's no doubt about who is the righteous, competent, qualified leader. Not them, those who claim to be the Khalifa. We are from the household of the Prophet. Not these people, as-sa'irina fikum bil-zulmi wal-udwan. There were other khalifas before them who at least tried to be righteous. These people are openly flouting and violating the laws of God, and they're oppressing you. فَإِن تَثِقُوا بِاللَّهِ وَتَعْرِفُوا الْحَقَّ لِأَهْلِهِ فَيَكُونُ ذَلِكَ لِلَّهِ رِضَى. If you know the truth, accept it and acknowledge our authority. وَإِن كَرِهْتُمُونَ. You don't like us. Or no, جَهِلْتُمْ حَقَّنَا. You are trying to ignore our status. وَكَانَ رَأْيُكُمْ عَلَىٰ خِلَافِ مَا جَاءَتْ بِهِ كُتُبُكُمْ. And right now, your view has changed. In the past, a few months ago, when you wrote to me those letters, you thought I was the righteous leader. Now you think otherwise. Doesn't matter. It's your choice. But you can't force me to take me and submit and surrender to Ibn Ziyad. Leave me free. Hur says, I never did all these things. You can't hold me responsible. Imam tells his companion Uqba bin Sam'an, Uqba, hatil khurjain, bring those two huge sacks full of hundreds of letters. Imam brings the sacks and opens them up. He says, look at these hundreds of letters, all of them from Kufa. Hur absolves himself of his duty. Imam also tells the caravan, embark, put the ladies in front. We are making our movement. I've made my statement very clear. My goals are very clear. Hur sees that this is a defiance now. He takes his army and he intercepts Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam addresses Hur, Sakalatka ummuk. May your mother cry for you. What do you want from me, Hur? Hur says, if any other man on this earth spoke to me the way you did, I would have answered him about his mother. But I can't speak anything but good about your mother. Second positive thing about Hur, he was in the service of the evil empire, but he respected Imam Hussein. He was in the service of the evil empire, but he respected the mother of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So again, there is an exchange. Imam says, listen, there is no way you can force me. Unless over my dead body, you can't take me to Kufa. Hur realizes that he can't carry out his duty of forcing Imam Hussein to come to Kufa, to surrender to Ibn Ziyad. So he says, all right, okay. You take up a route not to return back to Medina, not to go to Kufa. Take up some other neutral route. I will be escorting you from a distance. Meanwhile, I'm communicating with Ibn Ziyad to find out what he expects from me. At that time, when Hur is explaining his position to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he tells him, don't provoke me because I may be forced to take some action. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, what do you mean? Are you threatening me with death? And then Imam Hussein alayhi salam recites poetry according to one version, according to another version, he recites another sermon. سَأَمْضِي وَمَا بِالْمَوْتِ عَارٌ عَلَى الْفَتَى. I will live and I'm ready to die for my cause, and I don't consider that as a shame. إِذَا مَا نَوَى خَيْرًا وَجَاهَدَ مُسْلِمًا. So long as my intentions are good, and so long as my struggle is in submission to God. وَوَاثَ الرِّجَالَ الصَّالِحِينَ بِنَفْسِهِ. And so long as I wish to join the path of the virtuous. وَفَارَقَ مَذْمُومًا وَخَالَفَ مُجْرِمًا. And so long as I oppose the ruler who is evil, and so long as I make hijrah from whatever is evil. أقدم نفسي لا أريد بقاءها لتلقى خميسا في الوغى عرم رما فإن عشت لم ألم وإن مت لم أذم كفى بك ذلا أن تعيش مرغما. Arabs are good in poetry. When they want to express their deepest feelings and their thoughts, they become poetic. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is quoting a past poet who expresses bravery, courage, chivalry, to stand up for the truth, to fight against evil and not to be intimidated by death. If there's one word that can summarize this movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, I'm ready to die with dignity than to live in surrender and submission to evil. Hur knows he can't now make Imam Hussein change his mind otherwise. So they continue till they reach another point, the next station of rest, known as Bidha. In Bidha, Imam Hussein alayhi salam now delivers a third sermon. Amazing, even before reaching Karbala, on the way. Incidentally, some of his companions tell him, Ya Aba Abdullah, this is a small group. What we know is happening in Kufa is a much bigger army is being galvanized and mobilized. If there's any time now to attack, this is the time to attack. It's a small group, 1,000 only. We can easily overpower them. Imam says, no, my principle is I never start a battle. I will always be in defense. That's what his grandfather did. That's what his father did. Islam is always defensive. So in Bidha, again he explains, he wants to wake up consciences and minds. Ayuhannas, inna Rasulallah qala. In case you are not alive, in case you don't know, let me tell you what the Prophet said. What's happening is wrong, but let me tell you what the Prophet's guidance is. من رأى سلطانا جائرا مستحلا لحرم الله ناكثا لعهد الله مخالفا لسنة رسول الله يعمل في عباد الله بالإثم والعدوان فلم يغير عليه بفعل ولا قول كان حقا على الله أن يدخله مدخله. The Prophet has said, and therefore I'm acting on that guidance, whosoever sees a ruler who is unjust, who makes halal what is haram of God, who breaks the covenant with God, who is unjust, who opposes the sunnah of the Prophet, who is oppressive over the people, and despite all these things, very clear, and a person sits silent and does not resist and does not protest, and does not rise up against such an evil ruler, then it is the right of God to take this silent, complacent, submissive nincompoop to the same place where these evil rulers will be taken. That's the prophet's guidance. I'm sorry. So, apparently Imam Hussain alayhi salam was trying to raise up the conscience of some of those people in that army who may have written the letter, which Hur denies, and Hur says, I never sent a letter. And this caravan then continues till they reach Karbala. Once they reach Karbala on the 2nd, Hur is now given new instructions. Make sure the Imam Hussein's camp is kept away from the water. Hur is given new instructions and a new contingent is sent under Umar al-Sa'd. Once Umar al-Sa'd arrives, Imam Hussein alayhi salam organizes a meeting with Umar al-Sa'd. He tries to convince Umar al-Sa'd to change his mind. Umar al-Sa'd, for the sake of the dunya, refuses. He knows who Imam Hussein alayhi salam is. He recognizes the status of the Imam. He knows that there is punishment if you oppose Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Yet the dunya overwhelms him. On the day of Ashura, this sudden change now takes place in Hur's mind. And the reason for that is, now suddenly Hur recognizes and realizes that what he thought was going to bring about some good, if he could somehow bring Imam Hussein and let him meet Ibn Ziyad and maybe some sort of reconciliation and no bloodshed and a solution, a resolution to this problem, that was all a false expectation. Ibn Ziyad was different. Imam Hussein was too firm in his principles. He now recognizes that what he did was wrong in supporting evil against Imam Hussein. So on the day of Ashura, we're told that in the morning, after the initial confrontation that takes place between the two camps and the sermons are delivered and Umar al-Sa'd delivers his final decision, so Hur comes to him and says, well, is that your final stance? You are going to begin the battle? There is no scope for reconciliation? Umar al-Sa'd says, yes, if things were in my hand, I would have reconciled. But it's the Amirul Mu'mineen. And I have to obey his commands. Hur realizes Umar al-Sa'd is bought over. So he now begins to show movements to separate himself away from the army of Umar ibn Sa'd. He begins to move towards the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So one of his companions who sees him, Qurra bin Qais, he goes and tells Qurra, have you fed your horse with water? Can we go to the river and feed the horse with water? Qurra says that no. Qurra says, I thought Hur was deciding not to fight. I thought Hur was looking for a way to escape. Later on, Qurra says, had Hur told me that he wanted to leave the camp of Umar al-Sa'd and go over to Imam Hussein's camp, I would have joined him. The khutbas of Imam Hussein were having their effect, but some were brave enough, some were not brave enough to respond. Qurra was one of those failures. So Hur now moves a little closer. Another companion comes to him, Muhajir bin Aus. Muhajir says, Hur, what's happening? I notice you're moving closer and closer to the camp of Imam Hussein. Are you planning to launch an attack? When I use the word attack, I notice Hur began to tremble. Muhajir bin Aus says, this is very strange. If I were ever to be asked who is the bravest man in Kufa, I would not hesitate for a second to say Hur is the bravest man. What is this behavior I see in you? Hur says, أُخَيِّرُ نَفْسِي بَيْنَ الْجَنَّةِ وَالنَّارِ I see myself before two options. There's the fire of hell in the camp of Umar al-Sa'd and there is Jannah on this other side. He was in the service of the evil empire, yes. But he had his conscience. He had his faith. He had a misunderstanding. He had a false expectation. But now given the choice, he was brave enough to make the right choice. He was hesitant, yes. But finally, he did make the right decision.
مَا ظَنَنْتُ يَرُدُّونَ عَلَيْكَ مَا عَرَضْتَهُ عَلَيْهِمْ.
Immediately, he takes that opportunity and gallops and rushes to the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Presents himself before Imam alayhi salam. He says, جُعِلْتُ فِدَاكَ يَبْنَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. May I be sacrificed for you. أَنَا صَاحِبُكَ الَّذِي حَبَسْتُكَ عَنِ الرُّجُوعِ. I am the one who forced you and who escorted you by force and brought you here to Karbala. سَايَرْتُكَ فِي الطَّرِيقِ. جَعْتُ بِكَ فِي هَذَا الْمَكَانِ. I am the one who kept you away from the river according to the instructions of my commander. But all of this I did. مَا ظَنَنْتُ أَنَّ الْقَوْمِ يَرُدُّونَ عَلَيْكَ. I never thought that the offer that you made, that the proposal that you made for compromise, for reconciliation, for stopping bloodshed, that they would refuse. I'm sorry for doing all this to you. Wallahi, لو علمت أنهم ينتهون بك إلى ما أرى ما ركبت مثل الذي ركبت. I would never have done all this had I known this was the outcome. أنا تائب إلى الله. I make tawbah before God for what I've done. But the mistake has been done. The milk has been spilled. Is there any way for this milk to go back in the bottle? In the physical world? No. In Imam Hussein's world? Yes. Imam tells him, نعم يتوب الله عليك. Allah definitely will accept your tawbah. Please, فأنزل, come down. Hur says, for me sitting on this horse and coming out in defense of you is much better than me to descend down. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, alright, you go and do what you consider as the best. Hur now returns back from the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam to face the camp of Umar ibn Sa'd. يا أهل الكوفة لأمكم الهبل والعبر. May your mothers cry for you. What a shame on you. دعوتم هذا العبد الصالح حتى إذا أتاكم أسلمتموه. You are the ones who in your tens of thousands wrote letters to invite this man, this virtuous man, to come to Kufa to rule over you. Now that he has come, you abandon him. زعمتم أنكم قاتلوا أنفسكم دونه. You declare that we will defend you and we will fight in your support. ثم عدوتم عليه لتقتلوه. Now you are standing in a camp opposite him. أمسكتم بنفسه أخذتم بكلكله أحطتم به من كل جانب. And look at what you've done. You have surrounded him and you're stopping him the freedom to decide what he wants. فصار كالأسير. And now he is a captive amongst you. لا يملك لنفسه نفعا ولا يدفع عنها ضرا. He can't do anything to his benefit to escape from you. And worst, وحلأتم ونساءه وصبيته وأهله عن ماء الفرات. And look at your dastardly, evil, ruthless behavior. You're blocking him access to water. تشربه اليهود والنصارى والمجوس. Even the non-Muslims are allowed to drink freely from this water. But you as Muslims are denying the son of the daughter of the Prophet from water. Forget non-Muslims. تمرغ فيه خنازير السواد وكلابهم. Even animals that you normally consider as najis and despicable, they are allowed to drink, but you are not allowing Imam Hussein alayhi salam to drink. بئس ما خلفتم محمدا في ذريتي لا سقاكم الله يوم الظمأ. May Allah keep you thirsty on the day when you present yourself before him. Again, this is an expression. Hur never sent those letters, but Hur recognizes the depravity of these false Muslims who claimed that they love Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Finally, in the attack that begins later on, he comes back, a collective attack takes place, and then there is a single hand-to-hand, man-to-man combat. In that time of the combat, Imam Hur again comes to Imam alayhi salam to ask for permission now to go out to defend. And Imam alayhi salam grants him the permission. Hur goes out to the battlefield in order to express his faith in Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He says, إني أنا الحر ومأوى الضيف أضرب في أعناقكم بالسيف عن خير من حل بأرض الخيف
أضربكم ولا أرى من حيف. I am whore in case if you don't know me, and I am a good host to a guest, unlike you. And I come and strike on you with my sword, unlike you who are using your sword against Imam. And I'm here to defend the best man alive today. And I fight against you and I see no shame because you deserve to be killed. The Kufans lay a trap for him. Hur fights bravely, but they lay a trap for him. They come and chop off his horse's legs. He falls to the ground, but he fights as a foot soldier now. And even as a foot soldier, he manages to kill, the report says, almost about 40 of them. But finally he is attacked and he falls to the ground. But he doesn't die immediately. At that time, the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam come to the battlefield and they bring him back to the camp. When they bring him back to the camp, he's still alive. Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees him and says that, Antal Hur. He takes his head in his laps. He wipes his face and he says, Antal Hur kama sammatka ummuk. Hur, you are truly free. If your mother has named you the free person, you are truly free. You have freed yourself from the slavery, the blind slavery to this evil ruler, from the blind slavery to the dunya, from the blind slavery of the fear of losing the dunya. You're a free man. Antal hur fi dunya wa antal hur fi akhirah. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam, according to one version, or his son Ali Akbar, or some of the companions, they recited a marthiya. And this marthiya summarizes the acknowledgement of what hur contributed to the camp. لَنِعْمَ الْحُرُّ حُرُّ بَنِي رِيَاحِ صبور عند مختلف الرماح ونعم الحر إذ نادى حسينا فجاد بنفسه عند الصباح. The best of the Hur is the Hur from the tribe of Bani Riyah. Very brave, very firm, very persevering at the time when others were cowards. عند مختلف الرماح. He was the head of the infantry with the spears, and now he became a target of his same infantry. Very brave man. وَنِعْمَ الْحُرْ. And he's the best Hur because he called out to Hussein and understood who is the true ruler and the true Imam. And he's the one who gave up everything that he had, including his life, early in the morning. He was one of the first combatants who went out to the battlefield. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam was one of the last combatants. There was nobody to come to the battlefield to receive Imam Hussein alayhi salam. There was nobody there to wipe out the blood and the dust from his face. There was no one to recite the marthiya there. Assalamu alayk ya Aba Abdullah wa ala al-arwah allati hallat bi fina'ik wa anakhat bi rahlik. عليكم منا جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقينا وبقي الليل والنهار يا حسين
يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين, يا حسين.